This is Activation Energy by the Chemical Angel Network. I'm your host, Selma Duhovich. In this episode, I speak with Ginger Rothrock, the Senior Director at HG Ventures. After obtaining her PhD in chemistry from University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Ginger co-founded Liquidia Technologies, a biotech company that went public in 2018. She then went on to serve as the Vice President of Technology and Commercialization at RTI International for 7 years before joining the corporate venture investing arm of the Heritage Group in Indiana. Ginger, welcome and thanks for coming on the show. Let's dive in right away. What is industrial tech and how is it different from deep, clean, or climate tech?
Sure. And thanks for having me. So industrial tech, some people call it hard tech, some people call it tough tech. You've got deep tech, which kind of refers to companies and innovators building science-based or R&D-based products. Industrial tech or hard tech is really a subset of that that eliminates the life science side. Right? Industrial tech also, though, includes software that's purpose-built for the heavy industries. Then you have climate tech and clean tech, which is an even further subset of those specific verticals, which may include things like sustainability, energy, materials, food, water, waste. So you've got sort of deep tech and industrial tech going down to clean tech and climate tech.
Can you give me some examples of current innovations with industrial use cases, especially from your portfolio?
Sure. Love to talk about our own industrial use cases. I personally have gotten super interested in the circular economy. So circularity is a critical component of supply chain innovation in the industrial sectors. There are a lot of startups and innovation being developed that can take a waste stream and turn it into a marketable asset, or even water. I know you did a couple of podcasts on water, so that in many ways can talk about circular economy. In the case of industrial circularity, you've got corporations that aren't necessarily looking for a revenue stream. It's actually ways to reuse materials with sustainability purposes, to cut costs, to deal with maybe labor shortages, or lessen waste streams that are getting more and more expensive. So some great examples from our portfolio may include the company Electromet, which is a Kentucky-based company that removes heavy metals from waste streams, where you can then reuse both the water and the metal in your process. Got a company called Pretread in Colorado that repurposes waste tires and plastics into efficient industrial use barriers and blocks. We just invested in two companies actually in the circular economy recently, Zwitterco, which produces these membranes that enable water and product recovery in very high organic and water waste streams, and 6K that has two business lines that are interesting. One creates additive manufacturing powders from millings and turning waste, and they also take used batteries, this black mass that comes out of the used battery process, and can convert it into high performance cathode.
So with all the innovative activities that are taking place, how do you see the novel technologies impacting the existing value chains and value ecosystems? For instance, as creative destruction occurs, I figure one could go so far as to ask the question, who loses if these new ventures succeed?
Sure. So more broadly in industrial tech, you think of both digitization and the circular economy as examples of changing the nature of value chain. And maybe I'll stick with the circular economy examples just to keep the thread going. So literally the end of the value chain becomes the beginning, right? So you've got removal folks on both ends. Industry participants are now taking more ownership of their products and their components more broadly. So it's pretty easy to understand the case of materials, right? You have metals that are recycled back into a product instead of mined, right? On the packaging side, you can think about redesigning packaging for reuse rather than for disposal, which cuts out a whole category of folks, both on the production and the recycling or waste end. You've got, interestingly, new consumer incentives to take back or sell back items to original manufacturer. Think about things like the textile industry or high fashion, right? That are rather than That's an example of like Patagonia bringing back used items into their warehouses where they're remanufacturing and reselling those. Again, cutting out a huge part of their value chains. And then you have repurposing recycled materials like Pretread, my example, that's taking tires that were waste materials. And then they're going to construction products, which is completely disrupting an entire industry of cement-based construction products. So lots of interesting things happening.
What would you say is the promise and potential of industrial tech in averting the climate crisis and achieving sustainability?
So we're seeing interest in industrial technology in response to a number of different trends related to climate and sustainability. And I might bucket into to economics, ESG and public perception, and changing regulations. And so on the economic side, I mentioned it's getting more and more expensive to haul and treat waste. And a lot of this waste is often water, right? At some point, the cost of water and carbon will factor in, and why truck water around the world just to, you know, treat it. You've got labor shortages. So thinking about automation, lots of the industries are automating some of the low-hanging fruit. So that's, again, both a climate benefit and a economic benefit. You've got some supply chain decentralization happening, reuse of materials in a facility, or isolation and concentration of expensive materials, giving significant savings. And then you've got just, you know, the increasing costs and things like Chinese import bans that are all stacking against the economic and climate argument. Then you've got, of course, ESG and public perception. I mean, I don't have to tell you, decarbonization, sustainability mandates within the supply chain. You've got these large companies like Intel that are requiring the suppliers report on and improve their manufacturing and waste products practices for sustainability. So they need visibility and action across the supply chain, which leads to great hardware and software innovation. And of course, public perception, right? Anything from where does my stuff come from to things like my own water quality issues. So there's just, again, more increased transparency when it comes to their own consumption. So think about crises in Flint, Michigan, drawing public attention towards drinking water. More consumers than ever are interested in knowing where their products are derived from, right? And then lastly, you have the regulation side, which can include things like in Europe, extended producer responsibility, you know, where you're the person who makes the product is then eventually responsible for its disposal. And so there's lots of interesting industrial tech there. You've got newest ESG rules coming out from the SEC. So happy to touch on that. You've got, again, on the water side, you've got lead and copper rule revisions that require systems to have an inventory of all of their piping, right? So there are a lot of interesting things in all those economic and public and regulatory piece that are driving industrial tech, but also have this added benefit of climate and sustainability.
Let me dig a bit deeper into that last one. How do you see regulation impacting this rearrangement of the industrial space? You mentioned SEC's new rules on ESG reporting. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so you know the SEC regulates public companies, right? And there have been a lot of rich conversations on topics like what is the role of government in ESG, and especially in the past few weeks as these new SEC rules have come out. So they're taking steps towards consistency and accountability with these new rules. You can only manage what you measure, right? These companies and investors need access to industry data that's reliable and consistent and accurate. And the current state of sort of voluntary disclosure doesn't meet the standards. And so you do have the EPA, but now you also have the SEC that has proposed these amendments that require public companies to include climate-related information in their statements, right? And they're saying, hey, these are real risks that investors should know about. So what are these risks? Please list them. What are the impacts on your business, right? And what are you going to do about it? Not just, hey, list these risks. What is your plan specifically, which is really interesting. There's a component around their greenhouse gas emissions. So there's a lot of question about scope one and scope two, but then there's provisions for scope three, which gets more complicated the further away you are from the producer, right? And then there's you know, metrics around its audited financial statements, targets, goals, transition plans. So I'm interested to see what the response is to this SEC rulings when you have more political groups, I'd say, that may have reasons to regulate or not regulate. The SEC rules is kind of an interesting step towards basically consistency and accountability. And those will all flow down to private companies eventually, right?
Let's talk about those investing activities then. How do you see the flow of capital shifting? How much of it is being allocated towards industrial tech, and what is driving that?
So some of the trends I just mentioned are, I believe, are the real drivers, right? This economic efficiency, this public perception, this increasing regulation, which is probably also a public perception issue. So if you just look generally at the opportunity for decarbonization, right? If you try to eliminate, say, 30 billion tons of CO2 by 2050. That's one of the things that's out there. And let's just say $50 a ton, right? That's $15 trillion of costs. And that's going to need a lot of data, reporting, validation, innovation. Super interesting. That in of itself is a massive opportunity in decarbonization. I got the opportunity to see Duncan Williams of Nomura Green Tech share some recent data around who's investing what where. And the growth of capital in these sectors is so large. In 2019, it was $543 billion assets under management in this sort of sustainability segment, right? Or industrial innovation is part of that. In 2021, last year, it was $1.3 trillion. And overall, it's been about a 6x increase in 10 years. So there's such strong momentum capital flow towards industrial themes and specifically ESG-focused industrial themes. We're also seeing all these generalist funds starting dedicated funds and teams. So you have BlackRock that now has a decarbonization fund. You have General Atlantic, I think is the one behind Beyond Net Zero. You have Goldman Sachs with the Sustainable and Energy Transitions Investing, KKR Impact. So many of these players have traditionally been very large, almost generalist, are moving into the sector and putting focused effort there. And then you have a continuous rise of the corporate venture capitalists like myself as strategic players. So even for those without, I'd say, specialized industrial and ESG funds, these investment managers are increasingly viewing that as part of the business going forward.
And you anticipate that the ROI for investors will be as high as it has been for software and biotech?
I mean, I'm betting my career on it, right? So yes, the answer is yes.
Good. That's really good to hear. Let's dig deeper into the investment landscape. Who's investing in what?
Yeah, so we've had conversations about, is this going to be a new and hot area? Is it here to stay, right? Unlike past cycles. What are some things happening that mean it's here to stay, right? So we have these limits of temperature rise that countries all over the world are trying to get to. That's, what do they say, $100 trillion investment required to get there. A big part of that is innovation, right? There were 600 of the world's largest public companies who have said they're going to be net zero by 2050 or before, right? It's like well over 90% of the S&P 500 publishes a sustainability report last year. There's trillions of dollars of spending in the circular world. And just as I mentioned earlier, the amount of money and funds flowing into these focused investment funds in 2021, just say that the momentum is extremely large and very exciting, especially for somebody who got her PhD in like 2003 in green chemistry. So it's fun to see it now being exciting. But you asked like where also. So some of the largest industries by market size and investment are certainly advanced, like transportation, right? Electric vehicles, autonomous vehicles. Second, I believe, is environmental services and technologies, which includes a lot of the circular economy things that I mentioned. And then, you know, like waste reduction, water, and then energy efficiency are the real big topic areas.
How do you make money as an investor in this space, especially considering the time that it takes to bring industrial technologies to market?
Yeah, so a lot of venture capital models have historically been built around these, you know, software businesses that can scale faster, right, than physical materials and products that you and I know quite well, right? So people do think that it's hard to see venture-like returns for these industries that tend to be capital intensive. But we're finding that people are finding more capital efficient models for their customers, trying to almost like replicate a software return, all this blank as a service, right? Hardware as a service, testing as a service, water as a service, everything as a service. Think leasing models rather than forcing CapEx purchases. There's also a lot of software and hardware combos arising. So I think we're going to be really surprised by what gets automated and what doesn't. And things that may have traditionally been capital intensive may also have a software component in this sort of industrial tech lens. We also believe that the opportunity is absolutely there, but you're right, the timing is different and the capital in can be really, really different. It takes time and focus to get that product right. You need to get your supply chain. You have to get all the regulatory approvals together. You need to, you know, build a factory. But once all of that capital has gone in, this is the bottom of the curve, then you're like making and selling. And if you do it correctly, you can get patent protections, which is a benefit over many softwares. You can get like literally a legal monopoly. And so your competitive moat can actually get bigger over time compared to software, where as you get larger, I think more competition tends to come in and the more innovation you have versus maybe in some of these industrial tech industries, once you're in, then it's, there's more upside and more profit to be made. It's just a different trajectory, different time scale, different risk profile. But I think if you can be patient, thankfully I'm in a group that can be, it's there. And at the end of the day, so many of these industrial innovations are massive, massive markets, right? We're talking about the steel industry, the construction industry, the water industry. These are multi-trillion dollar things in the industrial tech. So the market size is absolutely there.
So in addition to technology, there will have to be some business model innovation as well. That makes sense. Let's talk about the risks and challenges you see investors facing when allocating money to industrial tech.
Yeah, I think if you start just looking back on venture capital as an industry, right, you have investors and unlimited partners that do and have historically kind of had a playbook, right? You have pattern matching, but industrial tech patterns don't fit, right? You can go online and type in, oh, software company, what do I do to raise a Series A? And there's so many lists and resources out there that says there are industry norms around how much ARR, what's your CAC, what's your LTV, the whole, you know, alphabet soup associated with historic software that allows people to establish patterns, right? Which is not necessarily the case in industrial tech, where you may have very lumpy sales cycles. You may have long sales cycles, right? The whole enterprise side. So as we just spoke about, you know, company trajectory, development cycles, timing, capital requirements are quite different from the norms of software and technology enabled startups. So just, it takes longer for these companies to achieve performance milestones. And so you have to be really careful about what timing for investment, maturity of the company and whatnot. And we're seeing more and more funds in the sector, including Breakthrough Energy Ventures, maybe break from the 10-year venture model, right? They have a 20-year venture model. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that the public markets are what they are right now. This is end of May 2022. So public markets and the SPACs are quite weak. So, you know, SPACs are a mechanism by which a lot of these industrial tech companies went public. These closed SPACs are trading very poorly right now. It is based on overly ambitious projections and some changing market sentiments around that particular methodology for fundraising or going public. But the public markets are just down, and this is new. I mean, it's been up for a very long time, and it happens to be down in the last couple of weeks, and we'll see how that plays out.
Can you elaborate a bit on how you see the current state of the global economy impacting early stage VC? Are you continuing to deploy capital at the same rate, or are you slowing down?
Yeah, I wish I knew it was coming, right? We thought this when COVID hit that, oh, the downturn is here, right? But then there was a very fast correction and it just kept going up. So I'd be a bazillionaire if I knew the answer to that. But for us, it's, you know, be prudent, but we're still making investments. You know, we're going to write a couple of checks in the next 6 to 8 weeks, maybe one, probably one next week and one in a couple of weeks. Not everyone's doing that. Lots of folks are holding back to see what happens, but we feel confident that the market is still there and our position in the market, as unique as we are, and happy to get through that as a CVC that also has strategic value, it's a good time for us to continue to invest.
Good. So that brings me to my next question. As you source and screen deals, what are you and other industrial tech investors looking for?
Sure. So maybe if I bounce off some of the earlier comments I made about challenges, right? Investors want to see scale and visibility to achieving those long-term forecasts, right? Things take longer, but there are ways in which you can, there are positive signals, right? Is there revenue? Is there supply and offtake agreements being authored? Are there partnerships that are really exciting with folks that have done diligence in ways that we may not do, right? So we kind of want to see hints at that. But generally, we look at the same thing that all investors look for, right? Team, market, product and traction. So for us in this space specifically, we're looking for a well-rounded team. You need a nice balance of those that want to push the envelope and not do things the way they've always been done. But you also need folks that have been in the industry that can talk the talk in the industrial world. And that's a really interesting balance to have on an executive team that we look for and are impressed when it happens. The market side, I already talked about, some markets are huge, some are not. And so understanding where a company is and their market potential, is it so niche and can't go broader, or is it going to be big enough? And then the product. And on the product side, I'd say here, we're specifically interested in customer demand. Those revenue supply offtake agreements, often we'll see entrepreneurs pushing their solution, their specific solution, their invention, right? Rather than taking a step back and saying, hey, what problem is really solving, being a little more flexible about how they might change their product or adapt their business model to meet the needs of the customer.
Tell me more about HG Ventures. What is your mission? What is your investment thesis? How are you different from other corporate venture arms? And in addition to capital, what else can you offer founders?
Finally, an easy question. Happy to talk about HGV. I'm with the HG Ventures. We're the corporate venture arm of the Heritage Group. The Heritage Group is one of the largest and oldest private companies headquartered in the U.S. Midwest. I'm in Indianapolis. We've got 40-ish operating companies in the industrial sector with major verticals in specialty chemicals, construction infrastructure, which is mostly roads, fully integrated, and environmental services. So sustainability cuts across every one of those sectors. We started HG Ventures a little over 4 years ago to invest in those areas core, adjacent, and disruptive to our industries. We do have a fancy thesis on our website, but very simply, we invest where the Heritage Group can help. So we look at the people, the assets, all the relationships in our operating companies to support entrepreneurs scale their businesses. From a model perspective, our venture model we try to combine the best aspects of sort of pure financial VC and corporate venture and eliminate all the challenges. And so our processes tend to be a lot more like a financially focused VC, whereas the support and help we give our entrepreneurs is we're pulling in all those goodies from the corporate side. So we can move fast, but also add real help. We've been very active. We've deployed about $200 million in investments, over 25 companies in those not quite yet 4 years. We also fund and run a hard tech accelerator to work with the earliest stage of companies. We've had 29 companies through there, and we are offering the next slots to companies tomorrow. So that's exciting for our fall. Personally, I'm a chemist. I'm a former entrepreneur, you know, always worked at that intersection of science, business, and innovation. And I'm super passionate about sustainability and helping entrepreneurs. And you asked how we're different, right? So there's plenty of jokes about VC, people adding value more than money, right? Through networks or whatnot. But, you know, in my opinion, I think the corporate venture really cuts through that. Support depends on the needs and stages of the company, like it would for any venture, but things like deep market insight today, like what supply chains are back up, how much raw material is costing, giving access to our plants so our entrepreneurs can see what operations really look like at scale, getting instant customer feedback, right? We can be user experience and pilots. We've been pilot tester and or customer for at least a third of our portfolio, maybe half, because pilots and initial sales with large corporations can be a big value inflection point. We've also gotten creative on talent as talent's gotten challenging, lending experience of our R&D group and others to companies in need.
So you're a fund with deep industry expertise, which is exactly what science-based startups need. That's great. Last question. What advice do you have for entrepreneurs, both with respect to pitching and building their companies?
So I think for entrepreneurs, there are three really important things. And those would be self-awareness, tenacity, and the gift of storytelling, right? Especially in the industrial world, right? A self-aware leader needs to know their strengths and weaknesses. Can they hire and surround themselves with people that know things that are different than they be? Can they learn things that are critical to the business? Are they an entrepreneur and a scientist, or an engineer, can they broaden their network beyond the scientific world, right? Particularly important in our world. Tenacity, of course, that cuts across all types of entrepreneurs, not just ours in industrial tech, you know, teams that relentlessly pursue success. And again, balanced with what I talked about before, not being married to that like specific technology solution. So there's lots of relentless people, but relentless about their solution, about their specific technology is not always the best thing. And the last one is like telling a great story, right? Big picture. That's critical for pitching. That's critical for attracting amazing talent, bringing on customers and the like. Do folks have a vision and ability to articulate a point of view that makes them stand out, right? People say like, why you, why now, why this? So I think that is particularly important in the industrial side.
This was quite enlightening, Ginger. Thanks so much again for sharing your insight.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I'm very honored.